Welcome to Real Talk Sundays, the podcast for the people, by the people.
Because some people can't handle real talk no matter what day it is.
What's today?
Today? Real Talk Sundays.
Today's Real Talk Sundays. This episode's near and dear to my heart. I say that a lot, but I truly mean this one. But we have a special guest. We're going to talk a lot about just fostering, adoption, parenting, being a mom, and, you know, Val, and I, you know, you are a double income, no kid household. You don't plan on having children in the future.
You are a daughter, though.
Yeah.
You are a daughter and a sister.
Yeah.
And an aunt and all the things.
And I have three dogs.
So we brought a special guest on to help us navigate this conversation. So it's not really just one-sided for me. And our special guest is going through a very specific journey that I'm so curious and it's so fascinating. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But we call her Slash because that's her fucking name. And she's an OG and we've gone way back. We've definitely known each other for a very long time. But as of late and really focusing on your journey that you've come along. The last time we went to dinner, you had, you know, told our group that you were working towards fostering to adopt and really just going down that pathway with everything. So I wanted to ask you just like sharing your story of parenthood, like when it started and where you're at today.
Yeah. So I have one son right now. He's almost four. And we have been wanting to expand our family for 2 years since July of 2021. And it was interesting because our son, instantly, it was like, oh, you're pregnant. Oops. Uh-oh, baby. And then when we decided we wanted to have a kid, that was proven to be a lot more difficult. So after 2 years of fertility issues and medications and shots and procedures, we were like, okay, so let's take a step back here and think of what does family mean to us? And what are the things that we love about Connor, our son?
Mm-hmm.
And what about a child and him as our son do we love? And never once in those conversations was it like, well, because he has this genetic code that only you and I can make and like our blood runs through his veins. It was like, no, we love watching him grow. We love watching him learn every day. We love teaching him about life and letting him make those mistakes and do these things. It was never a blood thing. And we were like, okay, so, you know, thinking about family and what do we like to do as a family together? And why couldn't we do that with some child that we didn't make, if you will? What does that look like? So then that's when we started looking into adoption first is what we looked into. That whole system is difficult and big and expensive and I don't agree with some components of it. And then that's when we started to look into fostering and how we got into foster care. So we're in the process of getting licensed, hopefully by the end of the summer. And then our mission with fostering is foster to adopt. So we'll see how that all turns out.
Yeah. Which that was one of my main questions is I actually do want to know like your opinions and thoughts on our system currently.
Yeah. So adoption in general, I have a lot of thoughts and opinions on that. So, you know, we have spoken with a few adoption agencies.
Yeah.
And the first one we wrote back and said, yeah, we'd love to meet with a coordinator to get more information. Please hook us up with that. And they go, okay, so we'll hook you up with the coordinator, but first we want to send you this. This is our packet of fees. And it said just min to max budget planning for one adoption was $63,000
to $72,000.
And
oh
I was
my
like,
God.
Thanks, but no thanks. You know, and so we found another agency in Utah where that's cheap and it's $29,000 to $33,000. And what's interesting about that is I'm like the vetting process, I think a lot of people are just wanting to get paid.
It's
like legal fees, advertisement fees, medical fees, counseling fees. And I think some of that stuff is very important and there's probably some ignorance on my end where I don't understand, but I just think you have a lot of families, like I know for a fact me and my husband have the best home to offer someone and opportunities and love and so much stuff that we could offer them, but I don't have $70,000 to give or take out to refi my house, whatever it is, to get this other child in to love them and provide them with that home and opportunity. So we looked into fostering, and fostering is, I don't want to say the only reason we wanted to foster was because it was cheaper, but if you foster to adopt, they said the maximum you'd pay was like $3,000. Not that it's about money. Usually with adoption, it's you find a mom who's in some sort of circumstance where she can't be a mom, doesn't want to be a mom, so you take a baby. With fostering, it's like you're taking a child who's in a situation that is not good for them, mm-hmm. and you are providing them with a situation that is good and safe for them. Yeah. And to be honest, like after we were researching both, because when we didn't even think of fostering at all, we were just thinking of adoption, and then we heard about fostering because you could foster to adopt, it was like, why would we not want to save a child's life in a sense? And I'm not saying like, oh, they're dead if they don't come to our home, but provide them with things that they have never been exposed to as far as like a loving family or a mom or a dad or family bike rides, family movie nights, camp trips, building forts in the living room. Like some of that stuff seems
healthy communication.
Yeah, it seems so just normal to us in our everyday life, and it's not for some children.
Yeah. And that's just, I think, the hard part, because it directly feeds the entire situation that's going around with our politics right now and our bodies, and just not to deter from the conversation. But that's the really hard, and that's always the argument where it's like, oh, you can just adopt, or, you know, still have the baby, but put it up for adoption. And it's like, you don't, people do understand, because even the common knowledge on the street is that shit's hard and expensive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's after going through, you know, certain situations, IVF and all of these other hormonal things that you're trying to do to get naturally pregnant. So they just, you're not made of money, and it's really hard when it's like, you have a need, I can fill the need, make this an easier process. Why are there so many hurdles for this, for our children to be in a safe space, when there are families who are willing to do it, but you're making it too complicated.
Yeah.
It's how America makes money.
Well, I know. Well, yeah, duh. Like, that's it. Just, it's a direct shout out, and it's hard because it's like, well, how the fuck do we change that? You know what I'm saying?
You can't.
You just...
And that's what I think people typically think, like, oh, they're going to end up with this nice, rich family and go on vacations and whatever. But I've heard of horror stories where these rich people adopt these kids and they abuse the hell out of them. And all this sick shit just happens. So it's like, you don't know the outcome. And so I don't know the answer to like the proper vetting of parents and families and who should get what and for what price. And maybe there's some ignorance there. Like I said, I don't understand how much a ad agency fee costs for an adoption, and if that should be $25,000. You know, I don't know everything that goes into it, but I will say, as far as the system for fostering in Idaho and America, that's different for every state, and we are going into this with Idaho knowing that it's probably going to be a little bit of an uphill battle for this to end in adoption for us, because Idaho is very, very strict, and their main goal with fostering is reunification with family, which can be good in some instances, and I think in some instances not.
Yeah.
So we've done some, like, we had a class a couple weeks ago where I asked a question saying, you know, how long do you foster a child for before the option for adoption comes on the table? Because they keep kind of hitting me and my husband with, don't go into this with the intent of adoption. Don't go into this with the intent of adoption. It doesn't always happen. That's not our number one goal. That's our number two goal. Our number one goal is reunification. But in every single conversation I have had with people about this, one person out of that group goes, well, I was in a unique scenario. I was able to adopt. Well, I had a situation come up. I was able to adopt. I'm like, okay, well, how unique is this if I've told six people the story, and five out of these six groups, there's been an adoption that has occurred 50% within
of
that,
the time,
right?
It's every time.
Right.
Like, right.
But when I asked that question, she said, you know, at minimum 12 months, because I'm like, how long do we give these parents to
get their
correct
shit
whatever
together.
Action? You know, and I understand shit happens. So I do think parents should get a second chance or try to be able to earn to work to get their child back to their home, absolutely. But what is that time frame, and what does that look like before it's like, sorry, your chance is up, and this baby's been with this family for X amount of months or years. You know, what does that look like? And they said it's different every time, but they did throw in there to me, like, we do want you to know that what you would consider a safe and loving home and the parents to be able to get their child back is different than what the state deems as safe and loving. So basically she was saying, you may not agree with, you know, us taking
these are up for debate. Yeah. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I would say that's kind of like our biggest fear is like my husband has this really big, big fear of like attachment of like, you know, and having, and also too, we have a 3-year-old, he's almost 4, but like having these kids come in our home and then leave and come in and leave, you know, and so I'm trying not to go through it with rose colored glasses, but I also don't enter in every situation of life being like, what's the shittiest thing that could happen? And I'm going to focus on that.
Plan for the worst, expect the best.
Yeah, which, I don't know. It's fine.
It's, you know what? I mean, if I have no idea, but I think with the only thing I can kind of wrap my mind around is when my kids had an au pair and the mistakes I made with the au pair. Because the au pair stays with you for a year is usually the term, and you can renew the term or you don't renew. Usually it's a young girl. Absolutely. And the crazy part is I think it's always comes down to communication and being as transparent in layman's terms with your children as it's happening. And like the biggest one they told, especially when they go to exit, because we knew her exit was coming, but it came prematurely. So we really had to scramble to make an exit strategy, but talking to them about how she's going to have to go back home and how, what that home looks like, let's draw where she lives. It's more tropical there. And like really communicating that this is very fluid, and she's not, even from the jump when we got there, we're like, she's only staying us for a year, so that, you know, let's track how long a year is with our calendar. Like it was something that we had to be very cognizant of, and I should have done better on the exit because she exited. I was going through a huge transition and I pulled her like a band-aid and I was like, you got to go back. It's not working for me. It wasn't working for me as far as quality of care went. I wasn't commuting well. There's a huge language barrier. So I was like, this has got to, I got to cut the term short. And the exit was so rushed and my kids had so many questions and they were so confused and they were like, but when's she coming back? Mm-hmm. She's not. And so that was something where I'm like, if I had any sort of input on it, it was just over communicate with them on every instance and make it a big conversation and honestly ask all the questions. Like, and they were wondering why we couldn't FaceTime her after and things like that. And I'm like, wow, I could have done a much better job on this exit and keeping this, because kids are flippity dipping smart. And at the end of the day, like, these are valid feelings, valid questions, and it's going to happen over and over again. Yeah. So to be able to have this conversation.
Yeah. And I worry because for the last 2 years, we've been talking with our son about mom and dad are trying to give you a brother or sister. Mm-hmm. Like we're working with the doctors, you know, he sees me get my shots in my stomach, or I got a surgery. Mom got cuts in her belly so she can grow a baby. And so it's like, we have to kind of flip that conversation. We've been trying to, like, we're going to have a little boy or girl come stay with us because they don't have a safe home. So we're going to give them a safe home. And so I'm going to get a brother or sister. No, like I can't, we can't say that. We can't go there with him because that would just be too heartbreaking for him to think, yeah, I got a brother or sister, and then they leave, you know, and that will happen inevitably if you're going into foster care. But I do not feel not optimistic that we will not get the opportunity to adopt.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm big. Yeah. Right time, right place, right.
Jump in on that. Sorry to cut off. No. When it comes to the system, it's a very dark place, and this is just from what I do for a living and stuff, but just be prepared that you are going to, and I think you're totally so strong, you'll be fine, but just know that there's going to be so much drama with those families. And when they go, like you were saying, what they deem a safe place is not what you would deem a safe place. And they go, all right, well, Bobby's going to go back to his mom and he's going to be removed from your house on Thursday. You're going to be like, oh my God, you're going to feel that guilt and the anxiety of, oh my God, what's going to happen to him? Because we know that this house isn't right.
Yeah, and our standards are better. Mm-hmm.
And I've had CPS situations where they go and they check and they say, as long as the child has, and again, this could be different from each CPS worker, right? If the child has a way out, a way to the room, a way to the fridge, I'm talking if it's like a hoarding house and neglect and stuff. As long as they have that, they're good.
They have access to food and the toilet that flushes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so just knowing like those stories that I've been a part of, I'm not telling you what to do or anything. I'm just saying like be prepared for that because like you said, Idaho is really strict. I would call it really bad. And there's other states that they're like, ooh.
That was my other question. Like, is it different state to state?
But again, I think it's a state rules. There's state rules that are different. And then you also have
CPS workers that are different. So a CPS worker is just like you and I, right? Mm-hmm. It depends on their personality, their own beliefs of what is real and what is not and what is safe, right? That's just how it is. It's just like bad police officers, good police officers, mm-hmm. bad CPS workers, good. It's the same concept to me.
They're fucking overworked, dude. Their yeah. caseloads are mm-hmm. insane.
They'll just think there's stuff that happened in California where a kid died, like the parents mm-hmm. killed him, and they were in court for that. So there's a lot of moving pieces and parts to it, but just remember that.
Yeah, and I do think there's a lot of turnover within mm-hmm. those fields as well, because my yeah. mom, she mm-hmm. works in that field, yeah. and like people don't enjoy that job,
yeah.
and they go into it and they see some shitty stuff, and they're like, "I cannot do this."
Especially an empath,
I was just exposed to something really awful, you know. So they, so there's a lot of turnover. Very mm-hmm. rarely would you get like a veteran one mm-hmm. that's like, "This is very safe over here. We're going to deem this." That they enjoy that job, or they've been there for years and years. Yes,
which again speaks volumes of the system.
Yeah,
which like I mean, honestly, is maddening, and like. Blessed and privileged enough to never have been had like firsthand experience us growing up and doing that, and the only like experience I could ever think of is when my cousin Jay, like she was in and out of the foster system, and it was a very interesting situation. But I remember I let her stay with us until we could get her foot grown, because she was almost 18, and it was right on that age out cusp. And it's really hard because they don't publicize that after 18, we can help you age out. We can still give you continued care. We'll help you navigate. Most of them don't think that's available to them, and they're just booted on the street. They're no longer the state's problem anymore. And so she's between this rock and a hard place. And the thing is my cousin, it's, you know, unfortunate to say, she's a bad mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, this, my cousin was pulled from her home and placed in a foster situation, and they went for reunification for my uncle, my cousin's dad. And lo and behold, he's a bad dad. Okay. And that's a whole other bad dad topic, man. Like my uncles are not the best dads, and I'll say that on camera. I'll say that anyway, because y'all know it. And it's really hard because I watched this child who had so much potential and just needed love, dude, love in a safe space. And like, I really enjoyed spending so much time with her, because I was like, God, it's really hard to watch so much external items that she has no control over impact her life so much and so heavily. And they made her live with him.
Yeah.
And it was, she ran away.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I remember her texting me too, being like, I'm not doing this. This is unsafe, psychologically unsafe, physically unsafe. And he just has a nasty temper. And that's the crazy part, is like her running away, getting put into another foster home she was in there for like probably a week or two, and then being removed and going back and forth. And just ultimately what she did is she packed up and she skipped town. She ran away. And then she turned 18 when she was gone. And like, it's really, really hard, because when I first got in contact with her, she was literally ran away and was homeless under the skateboard park bridge, and was literally just like swinging deals for food and like doing whatever she needed to do. And I remember talking to her and reminding, like, she was so ahead of her time because she had to be. She was so mature because she was in survival mode, dude, reptilian brain. And she was just, it was weird too. And I remember her telling me, like, I can't live with you any longer because I'm such a burden to you. And I was like, oh, honey, no, like, you're not. She goes, like, I am. I'm a burden to everybody. So I'm just going to dip out and just, like, vamoose. And she just was always like that. And it's hard because I don't really know where she's back in town now. But, like, we have such a different relationship. I never hear from her. And it's, like, really interesting. If she was just given the one home who gave a shit about her, her entire trajectory. I feel that way too about my children's dad. If he was just given one home to feel safe in, and taught even like one thing, like a social skill, like conflict resolution or open communication or feeling identification, any of those can change the trajectory of any child's life. And so it's just such a beautiful, selfless thing with so much feelings. And like, how do you feel you're going to be able to balance your mental health while all this is coming on too?
Yeah, that's something that we've definitely talked about, is just because huge. We feel very good right now in our marriage first, which you would have to be going into this, because I think when you add a child, blood or not, into the mix, it adds stressors and things to your life that you just wouldn't even imagine unless you had a kid, right? So we feel very good there. We have a lot of family support here. We've got all grandparents with the exception of one. So three sets of grandparents that live close. I will say the one thing that I have felt thus far in the process is there's a lot of resources. So I already have a resource peer mentor. I've had conversations with her. She's been through this. Mm. She's had foster kids in and out of her home. She's adopted two foster children. She's been to the court cases. She actually had a court case where she had to fight for custody between her daughter and the grandparent in Boston. Yes. And the court ended up ruling on her side randomly in Idaho. So like they have that. They have a Facebook page for foster families. So you can get together with other foster moms and have that community, which I think is helpful because I feel like you could feel very isolated going through it. Like no one knows what we're going through because Mike and I personally don't know anyone who's like, oh yeah, we fostered. We like come have dinner with us. We'll talk about it. Like what I'll tell you what some of our stressors are, were or some of the hardships or things that helped us. We don't have that. So we have found though, they really do try to connect you with people who have been through it or are going through it. So I feel like that will help quite a bit.
Yeah. And those are like my follow-up questions to you was like, what can your friends and family do? Or if somebody's looking to do this, what do they need to ask of their, basically their village to really give them the best support at this?
Yeah, that's hard. The first thing I would just say is just be interested and supportive, like, and just be happy for us that we're trying to go through this. Everyone so far has been really gracious about it and said like, how awesome of you. And we're not, it's interesting. I feel really weird. Cause everyone's like, you're amazing. You're such a good person. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'm doing this for the child. I don't want to feel that way, but they've been so gracious. My mom works in a field similar to Val. And she has been less supportive. She is very,
she's seen all the bad things and she's worried.
Yes. Oh. And that's been hard just because she doesn't ask for updates. It's like a very, it's almost like she's in denial. She's like, I'll pay for half of your IVF. And I'm like, I don't want to do IVF. I'm not doing that. That's not a thing anymore. I'm not doing it. But she's still kind of throwing that out there. And I know it's coming from a place of love. My mom has never been nothing but like supportive and there for us and in everything that we do. She would give me her home and go live in her car.
We love our mom.
Yes, she would. But her job is the bad. She works with the worst of the worst in those cases, and that is her job. And so what I have tried to tell her is, I know that that's hard. I know that that's your lens and your scope. But what I'm saying is that's your job is only the bad. Like that is what you do. You don't even see the other half of the situations where it's like, you know, a 4-month-old was in a house that was dangerous because the parents left them alone. Like, it's not like they were doing weird rituals and abuse or whatever, but they were left alone. The kid got taken away and then maybe the parents couldn't do what they needed to do to get him back. And they ended up getting pregnant again. And this is real life where they're like, we're going to try new with this one. New blank page, bye to this one. And then you can just, and I'm not saying all of it is like that. Like I said, no rose-colored glasses, but that's been a little bit difficult just with my mom. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so worried for you. And I'm worried for my current grandson. So it's just kind of like letting her know, like, we would never do anything that's going to put anyone in an unsafe situation, my son or the child coming into our house.
Yeah. And also you can, sorry, I feel like I'm just trying to talk because Amanda talks a lot. Sorry, now I lost
real
my
real talk right
so,
now.
Also, it's not a permanent thing. If you guys do this foster care, then you're like, oh no, this is not what we thought this was going to be. This is not it. Actually, this is affecting Connor more than we thought. And his opinion mental matters. Health is better than, you know, is more important right now. Then you stop, right? Like there's no contract, right?
That's what I told. What I told my husband. I was like, we don't have to do this.
Yeah.
We don't have to. Like, if at any point in time we're like, And I think, and that's what my mom has seen, is she says, I've seen so many foster kids get given back because the parents are like, we thought we were prepared for this and we were not. And I think that's very real. And I'm acknowledging that going into it. I have heard stories where that was not the case, though. So that's why I'm like, this side of things that I hear about, it's not enough to scare me away from trying.
And you understand too a lot about your about yourself. I feel like you are a very introspective individual and understand like a lesser woman would. And not saying that they're lesser, but like your threshold and your resilience is just a different level. And so I feel like this challenge really is something that you're ready to step into with confidence because you're rooted in your marriage and you're rooted in who you are. And so it's a lot of people are not on that on that that higher EIQ level to understand what's all going to go into this and look at it from every aspect and support. A lot of people don't have a healthy, rock solid village. That is a big game changer to be able to have this just blanket of support around you.
And the state has also lessened some of their rules and regs around that as well. Because historically, when you had a foster child, if you wanted to go on a date night or go to dinner with your husband or partner, you would have to go to the social worker or caseworker who would have to go to the judge who would have to get a court sign off. They would have to do like a home visit or an interview with whoever was going to be watching your child while you went to dinner. So it's almost like, how do you, that takes away a lot of like balance in your life because if you have a son who's legal yours or a daughter who's legal yours, you don't have to like go through all these hoops to go out to dinner.
Yeah, right? Grandma watch it.
So they've switched that recently in the last few years. So we went through this class where it's like a parent, essentially if you go through this class and you're licensed, they view you as a sound individual to where you can make those decisions of who is safe to watch your child for up to 72 hours.
Okay.
If you go on a vacation for 7 days, like that does need to go through the court and say, here's where we're going. So I do think that probably helps a lot with like some of that balance in your life and getting to do some of those things that are outside of children, which I'm a big, big believer in. Children cannot be your whole world.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going
to. No, that segues perfect into like one of our next questions, which is like how to keep spouse first. And like, we've had a lot of talks about that on like the levels of, you know, almost the tiered relationship, but marriage first in that and really staying rooted in your partnerships and making sure that you guys are 100, the base is 100. And so for that, thank God they did that because the strain you put on your relationship as it is through the whole process.
Dad alone would probably be like, I got to walk because I can't. The fact that
I don't get a date night with my baby, like once a week, especially if you guys prioritize your time with each other and quality time, dude. Mm-hmm. I have two kids. And when I was in one, it's so hard to even pencil in. And I had so much help every other week, you know, every weekend. And so it's like, that's a fundamental. I'm glad they loosened their assholes on that one, but honestly, like, what the fuck? That's a deal breaker for a lot of people. But how do you keep, like, you and your relationship solid during all this? Like, you guys check in a lot? Like, what's...
Yeah, we do. And I think that with even just being a parent already, it's kind of like we know going into it the impact that children have on your life. And I will say this. I hope your viewers don't hate me. I'm going to, okay, Real Talk Sunday, real, right? And this is, I'm going to caveat, I'm going to say a statement before I make my statement. I love my son more than anything in the world. I would jump in front of a bus, a bullet. I would cut my leg and arm off for him.
I'd kill for that motherfucker.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
He is my greatest source of joy in my life. The thing I'm most proud of, greatest source of joy, asterisk. He is not my only source of joy. And he cannot be. For him and for me, it's not healthy, right? So you have to have that balance. And I do think children are a big disruption to your life. And I'm not saying they're a bad disruption to your life. They are a disruption to your life. He's my greatest source of disruption. And I love all the chaos and everything that goes along with him. But I do think just acknowledging that like kids are disruptive to your life and your routine and your partnership and just everything, your mental health, like you're usually placing other things behind your child, which it shouldn't be. Like you said, marriage first, partner first, always before your child. So, my husband and I have gone through some counseling before just to keep our relationship strong. And we have these talks about identity and roles. And so if you were to like, and this can go for people with or without children, but if you were to list all the roles that you play in your life and assign a percentage to how much you give to that, because I think you've talked about this before, you and Kayla, wasn't there an issue with your parents? Yeah. So it's like when there are imbalances within the roles that you play or things that occupy your identity, that's when issues arise. So
you're so motivational. I can't even look at you right now.
But I mean, kids or no kids, right? So yeah. It's like, if you that's have parents exercise. As this higher percentage mm-hmm. than other things in your life, then you're going to have relationship issues.
Yeah.
Kids, right? And so, and it's just so important to be conscientious of that and to be real about it. And mm-hmm. it's not taking away. Like I said, I'll jump in front of a bullet for my child. Mm-hmm. However, you cannot be the one and only thing I live and breathe for always. Mm-hmm. That's not healthy for me. That's not healthy for you.
Yeah.
You're not going to grow up to be an independent, thriving, contributing member of society.
Yeah, if this breeds
the weight of the
this
world,
breeds codependence.
Yes,
like
right.
It's a breeder of it. I actually had that question on here. I don't even know if I erased it, but like, yeah, your opinion on those who absorb the identity of being a mom. I'm a mom. Or when people are like, tell me about yourself. And you're like, well, I'm a mom. And it's like
barf.
Yeah.
As there's like, so much
more. Gosh, because then when they leave, that's when you have this moment of who am I? What am I going to do? Yep. They're my whole life. They were my whole day. And you truly have this loss of self. And that's so much pressure to put on a youth. It really mm-hmm. is in your offspring, no less. But like throughout that, to really have a strong identity tied to your kids is very dangerous. It's a very dangerous thing to do. And it's unhealthy and it's unbalanced. And so those are definitely things that you always have to do. And I always remember this quote, especially about sons. It's like how we raise our sons to one day leave us. And you have to be prepared for that. You're growing this boy who's the love of your life, and then you have to let them go. And if you're not ready to do that, you're dabbling with a lot of their life and their influence and quote unquote mommy issues, daddy issues, right? Right. Parenting issues. So it's a very light treaded, you know, to very tread very lightly on that. But with, I think some of my other questions too is how, I think what for you is the hardest part about being a mom?
Keeping that balance that I've talked about, mm-hmm. always working towards that balance, because one of the things we told our counselor, because we were honest, we're like, I'm not going to be dishonest in these percent. Why are we in counseling? We need some freaking help, right? So let me be honest with these percentages, right? And we both had Connor's percentage that we put, or we identify with, or the roles that we play. I put mom as a higher percentage than wife or partner, right? Mm-hmm. And our excuses were for that is, well, like, my husband is a 35-year-old, high-functioning adult. My son, like, I have to wipe his ass. I have to feed him. Right? Yeah. Like he consumes more of me just because of his age and the state that mm-hmm. he's in. Our counselor was like, valid, but bullshit. Like, the reason why your kids take up so much energy is they're number one in your brain, mm-hmm. right? So, like, when you're out driving around town, you're thinking, wonder what Connor would like for dinner. Or if you're at, you know, Walmart grocery shopping, and you see something, oh, I bet Connor would like that. That would make him happy. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think that about your partner? Do you ever think like, ooh, they would like this? Like, I know this is their favorite thing to eat, or I know that he mentioned, like, you, it's just when you become a parent.
Because you do that when you're dating. Yep. You're like, oh, yes. They really love Kit Kats. I'm going to give them a Kit Kat.
Like, right. And so that's what my counselor said. It is a simple mind shift. It's not time. It's not time spent. It is literal energy
given.
Yep.
Yeah. Allocated. Damn. That's a good one.
I think you have the healthiest marriage I've ever heard of.
I would agree. No,
I know my husband's like, going to listen to this.
I know.
Like, okay.
No,
you just got it some lines from our counselor.
No, but I'm just saying, like,
cool, bitch.
Maybe the problem is all of our friends are in toxic ass relationships.
Dude, guilty.
And hearing
myself included.
Yeah, but like hearing this, it's like, oh, this is so refreshing.
Yeah.
And you could, of course, you're not saying the bad of your relationship now, because there's always good and bad. But just the stuff you're saying, I'm just like,
yeah, our counselor dropped some bombs on us. So like, and there's times where we still reference it now. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying, like, these were the things that like really hit home with us. And we're like, these are some of our issues. These are some of our parents' issues.
Yeah.
You just start to kind of reflect on that. And I think just us, we are not perfect. We have some shit, right? But us knowing, I think that is such a core pivotal thing for people to know about and be aware of, so that you can at least be like, you know, lately I'm feeling lower to you, and I know that I've been giving you lower percentage. Like, mm-hmm. how do we got to check in and kind of bump that up a little bit?
It's like and that. It's also too, it's like, well, I need help getting outside myself with that help with him as well. So mm-hmm. like I'm always having to do X, Y, and Z. Can you pick up 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah.
So I only have to do, you know, of it. And that's that mutual help and aid with a child, with children. It's like, then you, can you cut up some apples and give him a little bit of peanut butter when he says he needs a snack? Like, hey, you know what I mean? Right. I'm going to go take a shit by myself real fast. Same amount of time. Like, help me out. And you get to have those talks on like, okay, how can I better serve you right. as a partner? You know, cause it almost seems to be a natural segue to that. But I would piggyback on that. Like as a mom, I think what I've discovered is the most difficult for me is breaking. It truly is breaking generational trauma as I, you know, basically, not necessarily breaking generational trauma. I will say this, fixing my trauma and my, the strengths that I would like to make more, I guess the weaknesses that I want to make into strengths, but really finding out a lot about that, my childhood, my trauma, how I parent while I'm actively growing humans, totally. You know,
totally.
And I take my job as a mom very seriously. And with a lot of hope and like, a, you know, but at the same day, the same time, I act like I didn't just break down 3 hours ago crying about like, you know, my momming and all that. But like, you're truly trying to break things that you had growing up that did not sit well. They weren't your parenting style. They're not healthy. We've learned, we've evolved, and you just slip up and you're like, fuck, like, mm-hmm. hope and that one wasn't feel, a core memory.
But then you feel guilty.
Oh, guilt, shame.
And it's like, come on.
Yeah.
I know it's easier said than done. I'm not a parent, but you can't, and I always tell her this, you cannot, the expectations that Amanda puts on herself for parenting because she wants to break that cycle so bad, it's so hard to watch because she's so hard on herself. Sad. Yeah, she's so hard on herself, and I'm like, your expectations are out of this world. No one else is doing that. It's literally surviving day by day, but she has these expectations of herself. So then when she slips up or, you know, maybe loses her temper a little bit, right? And they're like, oh, you sound really mean, mom, yeah, right? But that's just what they think. But that's like, we're all human. Come
for
on.
Sure. And the thing is, I'm not striving for perfection. And I said, like,
but you are.
But we, not necessarily, but we talk about how I'm like, wow, my root goal, I just really don't want to fuck them up.
Yeah, that's
but we talk
one.
About it just like volleyball. It's a game of mistakes. It's who can make the fewest.
Totally, right? But like also, because it's, I feel like it's so easy to be like, why did my mom and dad do this when I grew up? Like, what were they thinking? Mm-hmm. But then as you become a parent, you're like,
They did the best with what they had.
It's like you have so much grace that you offer them because mm-hmm. you're just like, you didn't know any. I mean, I think there are some parents that are shitty. Mm-hmm. I listened to the episode with your ex mm-hmm. and him talking about his parents. And I'm like, when I say, I don't think parents try to do a shitty job. Some do. Most don't, right? So it's not like your parents are like, we want to raise her and just be shitty
and
parents.
Fuck her up. Yeah,
you know what I mean? So it's like, it's the same thing as for you. Like, you still love your mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Your kids are going to love you no matter mm-hmm. what you do or say. But nice. I do feel the same way. Like, I'm like, I don't want to be a yeller. But I just, I have a loud voice and I use it. And I don't, but I don't want Connor to grow up being like, my mom, if I didn't do this, she was freaking flying.
Yes, that's what you're worried about. Right. Mom gave me trauma. And they're on a podcast saying that, you know, like that.
Yeah, I had a realization the other day of my son where I'm like, I do not want him to date a woman who he thinks this is how they communicate to him. Because he's always like, you're always bossing me around and telling me what to do. And I'm like, well, because you don't do it. I'm your mommy. And I'm sorry, but we got to do things that we don't want to do. And then the fifth time I'm like, now, you know, you get that mom voice out and it's like, don't be a mean mommy. And it's like, we need to do it now. And it's like the only time I really can get their attention is when I'm loud mm-hmm. and all the times it's
I
not.
Hate that.
Yeah. And
but it's
like,
true.
Ah. And so, yeah, for me, it's just a lot. I'm just like, always, I'm like, I hope that wasn't a core memory where they talk about canceling 30 years from now. We're like, oh, well, she has throws things sometimes.
You're going to drive yourself crazy if you're talking about canceling in 20 years.
Dude, bro, it's like, you know, it's a lot. It's definitely a lot of pressure for sure. So it's, I would say that, yeah, that's my biggest fear. And I think, you know, to almost the antithesis of that is what brings you the most joy being a mom?
I read this thing the other day. Someone said, and I don't know if it was online or in an article, but they said, and it really stuck with me, and just in the moment that I'm at in my mom journey right now, but they said from 0 to 10-ish with your kids, 10 years, where you are their favorite person mm-hmm. in the world. You are like the center of their universe. their favorite person, which is why they get sad when you yell at them or it breaks their heart. And you see that in their face. That's why you feel guilty or whatever. Yeah. And it said after those 10 years, you will never be their favorite person again. And you won't, because, you know, from 10 to 20, they have friends or activities or sports they're passionate about. And then from 20 to 30, it's partying or career or school or whatever they're doing. And then partners and maybe children or whatever. And in order for them to once again be a healthy, thriving human, you can't be their favorite person. Yeah. You shouldn't be, right? And so, like, at this moment in my journey, my son is in that 0 to 10, and I love being that person. Like, when he gets hurt, if he's at my mom's house, my mom picks him up and says, oh, he goes, I want my mom, and he reaches for me. I love that. Like, I love that I am that source of comfort for him.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, that just fills me up with joy right now. And he's learning something new every day, just tinkering with things. I just watch his brain just work. And he moves his Lego here instead of there because it fits better. It's Iron Man's foot or something like that. Like, I love that right now. It's, like, my greatest source of joy is, like, you know, time is a real thief when you have kids. And I think you're on that journey where you're, like, I'm stepping back. Like, I need to spend time with my kids. This is what's important to me, is these memories. And I'll never get this time back, right? So time is such a thief. And I love watching him learn and grow. And then it makes you a little bit sad because you're, like, how the fuck are you 4 already, right? But I'm so blessed that you are 4. And I got to watch you. Look at you thriving and learning.
Make me sad. It won't make me happy, you know? Super emo today, dude.
But that's what I love about it. I love, like, you are raising the next generation. And it's, like, it's exciting. I know it can give you anxiety and get so nervous about it, but I think it's just amazing and beautiful, and I love everything that comes along with it.
No, that's definitely...
I'll ask the next question.
Go get at it, girl.
So, what was a barrier that you have encountered being a mom that you didn't think about
before having... By far, easiest answer, too much information. I mean, you could Google one thing and there's going to be 10 different ways to fix it. Or opinions. I hate people's opinions so much. And I think it's taken...
Oh, no, we mixed up these facts and opinions. Yeah. It's okay.
Right, exactly. Like, and it is, honestly, it wasn't just like, you know, people are like, when you become a mom, you'll know. And I'm like, no, I did not get to that state of feeling like, this is my son. I know what he needs, and I know what's best for him. Like literally telling my parents, uh-uh, we don't do that. I didn't get that confidence till like the last year or so. Mm-hmm. And I think, but it was a very confusing first couple of years being like, I don't know. I'm new at this. I've never encountered this. It could be this. It could be this. And now I'm like, no, I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know what's best. And I know it's this, but I think it's too much information, too many opinions. So I always really, really try when I'm talking to parents or parents of babies and they're saying, oh, my baby isn't sleeping, it's awful, I'm not like, you should do this. We did cry it out. It's the only way to go. I'm like, if you want to hear my journey, because my son really had a tough time with sleeping, I'll share with you some of the things that worked for us. However, caveat, I know that that's not it for everyone. So I try to really be conscientious of like opinions and thoughts that I offer, because I find some of that to be almost annoying and difficult when you're trying to navigate through motherhood, because I think information can be too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And social media sucks because you just, everybody just posts like the beautiful side of everything. Yeah. And that's just not what it is. And so you can really get like clouded versions and thoughts in your head about
expectations of how to be a mom.
Of what other households
how they
look
make
like
those lunches.
Yeah.
Please.
Dude, my lunch game on fleek. I don't even know what you're talking about. 100%. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Well, it's just like, who are you? Social media is interesting because, like, who are you posting for, right? Like, and I don't, half the time my kids eating dry cereal or granola bar for breakfast, but maybe on Christmas I make them a Santa Claus pancake with a whipped cream beard, right? But I'm not taking a picture of that and posting it on Instagram because it's like, who are you posting that for and for what? You
that's
want
another topic
people to
slash,
think.
That's another topic.
You want them to think, like, great mom,
good job,
great
mom,
right? So it's like, I just try to keep that in mind too, mm-hmm. as far as like
that means they're insecure and they need exactly, attention. Right? That's all.
A lot of the validation, yeah. or yeah. like, because I do follow a lot of moms too on TikTok that are like, I like to post. God, what is her? I'll tag her, but she's like, I like to post the real side of momhood and just shows how trashed her house gets. Like after a day, I'm like, absolutely. Oh my god, you can see my house, and just here are the things that I've never vacuumed under here. Yeah. You know? No wonder it looks like that.
I haven't showered really, in 10 days.
Really bringing that real talk estimate, you know, expectation to a lot of the content, which I do, is good. Those are rare. Those yeah. are rare, and those are real people. And so it is definitely, yeah, it's hard with the expectations, you know, that the other people set or society sets on yourself. And you're like, God, especially around postpartum, mm-hmm. post baby body, like post, it's just the expectations I thought of my body were so twisted where I'm like, why isn't it going away? Like yeah. all these other moms, their babies are 6 months old and their bodies look amazing. Mm. What's going on? I'm 4 years out. Like, why didn't mine just snap back? And it's like, girl, no, this isn't real. That's not real life. Stop. Mm-mm. Don't put that on yourself. So it's just a lot of different types of expectations through your entire thing. And then I do follow a lot of parenting on TikTok. I would say like huge shout out to Parent Talk has literally helped me with so much in conjunction with my counseling. And even my son sees a counselor just through some shit for our family. But like, I really thought with all of the amazing experts out there and successful parents out there and all the advice that they give, there's just been some really profound videos that have really helped me in my parenting and my patience and what I'm working towards. So I give a huge shout out of that being just such a great resource and a great community for parents who are fucking fuck the shit. This is raw. Like mm-hmm. parenting's fucking hard.
Yeah.
One of the biggest challenges I'll ever face in my life. You know what I mean? But what a challenge to take on and really try your best at. And that was, I think, a really roundabout reason where I was like, wow, I've never in my full life truly gave something 150%.
I'm such a quitter. I'm like,
oh, that's so funny. Oh, it's not alone.
No, I'm like, it's Monday. This is the new me. I'm starting this thing. And by like Tuesday at 5, I'm like,
fuck this shit alone.
Yeah, I'm a quitter for sure.
And so I think I'm like, well, fuck, if I'm going to give my all to anything, it's going to be my kids. Like, we got to do this. So yeah, I think that's a lot too with my expectation. I was like, damn, this isn't 150%, man. But that's not realistic. You know what I mean? But yeah, ultimately, like, my parenting journey is just completely different. And I think honestly, in its own segment, cause I just have a different journey with my children and where it coming about. But like, I even remember thinking about, gosh, you know, fostering. And even when Jay was in my house, just thinking about, I could do this for other kids. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, your heart's too big, mama. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you can compartmentalize. You want to save every man that doesn't have a job right now, okay? Let alone every child that you're like, I need to help them. Here's my blood. Like, take it all. And he was like, look at just what you did with Jay, like constantly just giving everything. You struggle with boundaries and you have to have strong boundaries with this. Yeah. And he was like, just trust me on that. I was like, okay. But it's so true. And he even said that about, I was like, well, we could foster other things. And he was like, mm-mm. Man, you can't foster kids, man. You'd be like, no, the last kittens I fostered, they're you still at my house. So Mario's still there. Not comparing kids to cats, but I'm just saying, like,
not going back.
My boundaries, my heart, I'm such an empath. It would just be so emotional. It takes a fucking strong person. And I know you don't like being like, I'm not doing it for kudos, but to recognize real, like, you are real. You're a real OG. This is fantastic. And it is very big of you and it is very selfless. And I'm so proud of you as to just be associated with mm-hmm. you. And also, like, I'm so emotional, but it's a good emo. It feels good. I feel warm. And also might be the rumplements from last night, dude, coming back.
The alcohol.
I don't know. I just feel really warm and fuzzy right now talking about mommyhood. Cause I don't really talk about it a lot,
but also check on your moms though. Like, everyone needs to check on each other. Cause you were I vividly remember this. When I was getting ready to have my baby, you guys show up to dinner and you're like, here's some diapers. Great for your child. Also, guess what? Here's a candle. Here's some bubble bath. Here's some tea for you. And I feel like a lot of times after you have kids, all people focus on is your kids.
Yeah.
And I remember you were like, you need to take care of you after you have a baby. You go home and you're like this healing, bleeding cow. Like,
you're like, oh, 6 weeks right? back to work.
Yeah,
bitch.
Exactly. And, and everyone's like, how is the baby?
I'm going to get
like,
badass out of the freezer.
Like, do you want to know how I am? Because I'm kind of fucked up right now, you know? And I could use some time. And I also think, too, like, your life doesn't have to be play dates once you have a kid, mm-hmm. too. Like, let's go to happy hour. You don't have to all surround yourself with all kids mm-hmm. and stuff. Check on your moms. Like, they're people too, and they need that other part of their identity to where
for sure
doing other things.
Bro, yes, it's just all consuming.
But yeah, you ever since you gave me that gift for a baby shower, anytime I go to other baby showers, I mm-hmm. implement the same things. This is for you too.
This whole party's for that baby. What did you get? After this, you get a lot of bullshit. Like, we need, minimum. That's so big. I'm always about that. Like, it is definitely easier to say than do, because I'm a big advocate on you put the oxygen mask on yourself first. Mm-hmm. I mean, I preach that constantly, but when it comes to living in the real life, you're like, oh God, them first. I got to take care of their needs, and then his needs, and then their needs, and then work needs. And you know, I can wait. I know my thresholds. Right. I can wait. I'll wait till I say uncle before I'm like, okay, go get something to eat.
Man, you're being like, my cozy. Lips are purple.
Yeah, I'm dusty. Go get a sandwich. So yeah, I think it's a big journey, and everybody's on their own, and like comparing each other is just never going to do it. But check in on your moms. That's a good one. That's a fucking t-shirt. Check in on your moms. It's a really big one. And talk about it. I do think that, like, specifically postpartum is getting away from that stigma of, like, we don't talk about it, we don't do it. But it's becoming more normalized to vocalize and talk about our feels and late onset postpartum. And that's another one, too, is, like, a lot of new moms out there. We just isolate because you're in your house, you mm-hmm. know, especially 6 to 8 weeks for the first initial. And you're just like, oh, I literally had to have people come into my home and be like, girl, I got it, go. And I would be like, okay, but I struggle with asking for help and being like, no, I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to be struggling. Every mom struggles. I'm supposed to just figure it out, right? So it's really teaches on the experience. But the more support you can have, and that's a big thing of mine, is I struggle to ask for help. That's mm-hmm. a big, big one in my therapy too. It's like, ugh. And so when people just say, I'm here to help. I need you to go. I got it. I'm the type of person that needs that. I need to be strong armed into helping myself because I will to the grave, you know? And so I think that's really a big one for me. But yeah, ultimately, dude, fucking parenting.
We're all just doing our best.
We're doing our goddamn best. I put that as outro. I was like, in summation, fuck society and anything that you think is required. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you just have to follow you got to follow your intuition. You got to follow your gut. You got to follow your heart. You just got to stay in it. Ask for help. Establish boundaries. Ask for help. Yep. Get a therapist to help you learn that. But yeah, I don't know. And it's different for single moms too than it is for couples.
Right,
and
right.
I can imagine single people trying to adopt. Is that a thing, or is that like a disqualifier?
Yeah, so you can adopt. I can't remember. You have to be a certain age. There's requirements for everything. Like if you're going to adopt, for certain countries and areas, you would have to be married 5 years first. But if you're single, you have to be at least 30. I mean, there's different rules and regs for everything. Yeah. Fostering, though, absolutely. You can foster single.
Hmm. What a trip. I would need help. I need help. I could do this myself, but I need help. Damn. All right. Well, I just wanted any last words, any last input? I mean, I know.
No, I just love everything that you're doing.
Oh, yeah, maybe this might change. You guys should have me back next summer.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I'll start.
So it's been a year.
That would be good.
Yeah, dude. And I would, I guess, on our way out to asking you, and I want to start asking every guest, we were talking about asking a guest a question, the same question every time. But you already dropped some knowledge on this fucking mic drop. But what is the best real talk or real advice somebody has given you?
Regards to parenting or
just life?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to keep it in regards to parenting just because we're on the topic. But my dad, actually, he said this to me. I think I was about like 24, 25. So like still kind of young and dumb, but like an adult, not mm-hmm. like 18 and just left the home. And he said, I had a situation going on. I don't know if it was at work or I don't know. But he said, I have parented you all that I can parent you. I am now your friend. If you want advice, you can ask me for advice, but I'm not going to parent you anymore. Like, now is my time to be your friend. Mm. And that is what I will be to you now. Mm-hmm. And so I try to keep that in mind, like with my son and everyone, you know, is just, is, and that's boundaries too. That was him saying the parenting boundary is no longer there for us. Like, mm-hmm. I'm your friend now. I'm not going to overstep in that sense or whatever. And I just have always, that's always stuck with me. And I've really, really, really love that. And it was kind of like, I wanted parenting advice in that moment. And he's mm-hmm. like, I'm your friend now. I mean, I can give you advice if you want it, but it will be from a friend, not from a parent. Yeah. I have parented you. I've done the best that I can. Yeah. That is what I, you are who you are now. You are a human. So I will give you friend advice, but I'm not going to parent you anymore. So I love that.
That is a good one. Because we've even talked about this previous. I don't think it's ever been, we had to cut it for somebody, but I was talking about how I saw a message that was like, for the first 18 years, you are not their friend. You are their mom. You are their parent. You are their guardian. You are there to guide them, to make them into somebody you would want to be friends with after they've stepped into their own hood. And that's really, really hard, because you do see a lot of parents that are like trying to be their buddy, and it's like, we're not there yet. We have the rest of their lives, 18 to life, to be their besties.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll have a completely different respect for each other. But I got 18 years to build foundation to become a good person that I would want to befriend. And it's not a popular opinion for sure amongst, but that absolutely, that's fantastic advice.
Well, and it makes it easier too, because then if my dad ever offers me friend advice and I'm like, cool, I'm going to do opposite. He's like, cool, you do you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was just that boundary that was established right away. And I've always just, I'm like, that's what I want to do with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Mic drop. Stop dropping all of our mics.
These are expensive.
I know. But thank you so much for joining us today. What a privilege and a blessing. And I'm just, I'm so excited for your journey, dude. This is big.
More to come. We'll end this on a dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, dude. Are you my mommy? Dot, dot, dot. Where we're at. Today's artist and song. This is my, I picked this song because it is my daughter's favorite song. Judge me, I don't care, first of all. When she really started enjoying this song, she didn't even really speak English. Okay, so she didn't really know words.
She liked the beat,
She loved the beat, dude. I have a video of her just, I got a receipt of her just hanging out on this song. But the song is called Ménage à Toi. The artist is Lizza.
Parent of the year.
Parent of the year, baby. I'm savage. I'll clean the house to this shit. I don't care. Whatever gets your body moving.
She doesn't know what it means. Continue.
Oh my gosh, I know. And she tries to say it. I'm like, all right, I think we're done with this song now. You're four. But by Lizza. LIZOT. Ménage à Toi. But thank you for joining us for Real Talk Sundays.
Dreams and alcohol. I love the story when I'm all alone. My body dreams and alcohol. I love this story when I'm all alone. I love my body dreams and alcohol.
I'm a sex preacher.
When I'm all alone.
And a love teacher.
Dreams and alcohol.
I'm a sex preacher.
When I'm all alone.
I'm thinking about
ménage à trois. With me, myself and I. Ménage à trois, oh my god, oh la la. Ménage à trois, with me, myself and I. Ménage à trois, oh my god, oh la la. Dum, dum. Myself and I, ménage à trois. Oh my god, oh la la. Ménage à trois, with me, myself and I. Ménage à trois, oh my god, oh la la.